What's up, everybody? No Coast Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And it has been a very long time.
Oh, I've missed you so much, Tom.
I know. So much has happened in the interim. Just for those of you that don't know, we've been gone for almost like a month.
Yeah, it's been a month.
A month since we did our last episode. And the reason for that is that, as you might know, since we're with WGM Plus, we recorded previously in Tribune Tower. But Tribune Tower has since been sold and vacated of all its tenants. And WGN Radio has moved across the river to the beautiful new studios at 303 East Wacker.
And I've got to say, just that new studio smell, there is nothing really like it, you know?
It's a little bit like a hip Menards in here. You get that nice carpet smell.
It's like when you bust out that new modem for your new computer and you just got that new modem smell. Just a little bit of must.
Yeah.
In there. Oh.
The nice links. They should make that a little one of those air fresheners. New modem smell.
New modem smell.
Yeah. Lots of fun new tech in here. It's really interesting because we get a different perspective of the city a little bit. Although right now we are recording in one of the smaller booths.
It's very intimate, Tom.
It is.
Tom and I are butting knees right now.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got great knees, but I just don't need it to be docking with mine the entire time.
Hey, we need to be able to reach our target audience somehow. What better way to do that than knee docking?
Knee docking. But we're so glad to be back. We're very happy to be back here. Today, we really want to just talk about a lot of interesting news that's been happening in the film world. We've got so many great interviews lined up for you, but we're still waiting on some of the other studios to be built. So for right now, it's just going to be Connor and I. But there's plenty to touch on that's going to be affecting people here in the city of Chicago, especially the consumer, all you people that are going out and seeing movies. The landscape has really changed a lot
in the last like year. Seems like
it's been a total overhaul of the way that people are going to see movies, and we thought streaming was, you know, the big thing. I remember back in like, what, 07?
Right.
That Netflix comes out with instant streaming. And we're like, oh my God, this is the future of everything. We can just watch whatever.
And since then, it's evolved into its own movie studio, its own exhibition format. And of course, in any sort of market like that, you're going to have the pushback from the old established modes of exhibition, which is what we're going to be talking a little bit about right now.
Yeah. So as many of us are familiar with, MoviePass has been kind of this huge phenomenon with, I don't know, people who go to see a lot of movies, even people who really don't go to see a lot of movies. It seems to have been this really great way that people have gotten together and just got them to go out and see more movies and save money while doing it. I definitely was one of the more skeptical people when that first came out.
Seems like it's a too good to be true kind of a situation.
Right. MoviePass obviously existed prior to this recent craze of subscribers. Used to be somewhere in the realm of $30 to $50 a month. I don't have the exact figures, but it was much higher. And then they had this new CEO step in, and the price got dropped to a mere $10 a month.
Right.
And this was their huge hook. This was going to get people to use MoviePass. For the price of a Netflix subscription, a basic Netflix subscription, you could go see one movie a day
forever
in perpetuity,
right,
as long as you were subscribed. And it seemed insane,
and it
were like,
still does.
It still does not make a whole lot of sense to me. There's very little that I really understand apart from the basic mechanics of it, which is you do the sign in on your phone using the MoviePass app, and it loads the appropriate amount of money based on where you're signing in at. You have to be within a certain range of the theater. So if you're going to the AMC in Chicago, you know, it's going to load a certain amount on. If you're going to the Regal Cinema out in Des Moines, Iowa, it's going to have a different amount. It's just, you know, appropriate to the theater.
But the financials of it just don't make any fucking sense to me at all. Like, yeah, what was the, you could speculate all day, but like what the CEO's case, like you got to go to a business plan if you're going to change your product that much.
Totally.
And if somebody, $10 a month is less than the price of a regular movie ticket in most places.
And so, yeah.
And then they dropped it again.
Yeah.
Didn't they? To like $8?
Yeah. But then things started getting a little bit hairy. As you MoviePass users know, they started needing ticket verification. They stopped accepting new subscribers for a little while or made you pay a higher rate. And they added another stipulation where you couldn't see the same movie twice with a movie pass. So you couldn't just go and see, you know, Jurassic World 2 like
two times,
or you couldn't go seven times in a week, though Christ knows why you would ever want to do that.
Right.
The point is that you could previously and now you can't. And now they're going to be introducing something that Uber drivers and Uber users might be familiar with.
And dread.
Dread surge pricing. According to ScreenCrush.com, MoviePass is going to start charging customers more when they want to see a popular movie. They in turn got this from Business Insider. MoviePass is going to begin using a high demand, quote unquote, pricing system in July. In July. So you're going to be hearing this. And they're going to probably start surge pricing. It's going to add $2 to $2 to titles or movies that are really popular. So if you want to go see The Incredibles 2 on opening weekend and you have your movie pass, you maybe have to pay an extra $2 at the box office. And it kind of makes sense from a business perspective,
right?
Because, you know, they're probably hemorrhaging a certain amount of money. They're probably going for a loss leader sort of thing. Like, we'll get a bunch of people hooked on it and then start charging them a lot.
Right.
But I cannot imagine a lot of people who use MoviePass wanting to stick around after that, because the whole convenience of it is that you don't have to pay for a ticket.
Right.
Like, but what else are you, you know?
I don't know. I guess I was coming in on the other side of that, because I imagine you're still, like we just said, you know, is it still $8 a month? I'm not 100% sure if it, like, went back to...
They're kind of all over. It's still ridiculous. Even if it were $15 a month, that is, like, so much cheaper than any
right.
option, you know, in terms of, and it's so much cheaper than paying per movie.
So you find out that if you go to see Incredibles 2, to use your example, on opening weekend, you have your movie pass, you've already paid the $8 a month, you're going to see it at the beginning of July, let's say, you already paid it, and then they say, oh no, there's a surge price, so you have to pay an extra $2 to see the movie. That's bringing up your cost of going to see a movie to $10, which is very standard if you were going to buy
probably
a regular ticket at the theater, right?
Yeah. But it's just, it's all, for me, I think the biggest draw is the convenience, is that you
right.
just don't, you've already paid for the, you've paid for the ticket. And now, obviously, they're not just going to start hemorrhaging subscribers, because as you said, that's still totally reasonable. That's still so much cheaper. But it's, for me, it's a little bit of a slippery slope situation
sure.
where it's like, well, what are they going to introduce next?
Right.
Because as we said, it's kind of this loss leader mentality where they get you low. They get you in at the low price, and then they keep pushing it up so that, but you're not going to give it up. It's the same thing. Like, Netflix can probably raise their prices. I mean, they do have to raise their prices because, you know, they are now a production studio and they're trying to get bigger budget titles and this, that, and now they have 4K streaming and
right.
that sort of thing. But they got people in this mentality that they can't live without Netflix.
Right.
I mean, I've even thought about, I was like, could I, in reality, cancel my Netflix subscription right now and feel good about it and, like, not have those kind of pangs, those
right.
hunger pangs, being like, ah, oh, but I really need to watch seasons 1 through 5 of That 70s Show, like, right now, man. You know, and I'm a person that owns a lot of physical media, but just having that convenience is so nice.
Right. But that's interesting to put it from, like, comparing MoviePass to something like Netflix, where when Netflix rolls out another, like, a jump in their price, they're adding new things to it, right? They're always, like, they're boosting their original content, they're adding 4K streaming, and they're adding things to it, whereas with MoviePass, it seems as though these additions that they've been making... It doesn't get you more. It's making you, as a consumer, pay more. And it's reminding me, actually, I can't remember, it was a couple of months ago, but the CEO... said to investors that MoviePass's current strategy wasn't going to be profitable for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And that makes me wonder that if this new news, this surge pricing, is just like this first step in a slew of to come
changes
that are going to maybe bump them back up to something like what the movie pass originally was, you know, in that $30-$50 range.
I think they're going to lose people.
Right.
At some point, it's just no longer, you're just not seeing enough movies. I think most people aren't really seeing that many movies on their movie pass to begin with. I think they're probably, I'd be curious to see what the numbers are in terms of, on average, movie pass users, how many movies do they see per week with their movie pass? I would wager a guess that it's no more than like two or three.
Right. MoviePass, we know.
Even a month, maybe.
Right.
Like, how many movies come out in a month that people will actually, even with the MoviePass, will get off their ass to go see?
Yeah.
Speaking of all this,
MoviePass, we know that you have those utilization reports.
You do.
Send them to me in a PDF, editable PDF document. I don't do that read-only bullshit.
No.
Send that to my Hotmail or my SBCglobal.net.
There's nothing worse than getting a read-only document.
Yeah.
It's total bullshit. Speaking of market competition, though, AMC Stubs has introduced their own version of this all-you-can-eat sort of deal. Although it's not quite all-you-can-eat, it does have a lot of really great features.
It's a triple play buffet kind of situation.
Indeed.
Like when they're on their website, the way they describe it, it's like, if you see a movie that you love, with what's it called again? It's the AMC A-List.
Yeah, AMC Stubs A-List, an extension of their current Stubs
membership,
you know, membership thing.
And it says on the website, if you see a movie that you really love, see it again and again. And that's it. But that's it, though. You can only see a movie. If you see one movie that you want to see over and over again, you can only see it an additional two times. And then that's it for the week.
Right. But
or the month, even. I'm not 100% sure about
that. Yeah, it's here. Let's it's a little bit of a complicated sort of thing. It's here's the official line from AMC. So this launches at June 26th, 2018. And they're not really not waiting.
No.
No, they're like, let's go. AMC Stubs is going to be their newest. It's like a tier of the Stubs program, so you can kind of upgrade. So you can see three movies every week. So that's lower than the potential movie pass, which you could see potentially seven movies every week.
Or eight, for example.
Or eight.
Just to one-up you really quick, Tom.
Wait, what do you mean? How could you watch eight? You only get one per day of the week. This isn't the Beatles, man.
Okay.
Just 8 days a week?
I just wanted to say a number that was higher than yours.
Well, you know, you petty bastard.
Yeah, well, no arguments there.
AMC Stubs A-List is going to be their newest and best, quote-unquote, tier in the AMC Stubs loyalty program. You get three movies every week. And that includes all their premium formats. So something that needs to be noted is that MoviePass does not work for IMAX. It does not work for Dolby. Yeah, it doesn't work Regal. Like they don't do the Dolby Cinema. Like, you know, a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they have a lot of theaters have like the Cinemark has Cinemark XD. Like it's their super high format.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Thing. MoviePass does not work for those. Stubs will work with AMC's Dolby Cinema. It's going to work for their 3D. And I'm sorry, Real D, 3D, Big D.
Oh, Big D.
And D-Box.
Whoa.
What marketing intern came up with these names? but it's going to work for those premium formats. And it's for the low price of $20 a month. Which, again, higher than MoviePass. However, you get more. And those three movies you watch, they can be the same movie three times.
Yep.
It can be two in one, three different ones. And
so it's a lower total number than the movies you could see, but there's more versatility to
there's
it.
There's more versatility. You still get the benefits. Yes, you will still get the benefits of a regular stub subscription from AMC, which, if you ask me, is a really good subscription for people who go to the movies a lot. You get free drink upgrades. You get you know, it saves your tickets for you. You get like a bunch of extra stuff, and there's rewards dollars. So like if you spend $100, you get 10 back that you can use at the concession or on a ticket or whatever. And it's pretty impressive. And honestly, I think for someone who's serious about seeing at least 3 movies a week, it's a pretty good deal. The only issue is that it doesn't roll over from week to week. So if you don't use your 3, it resets.
Every Friday.
Yeah, I believe it goes from Thursday to the following Friday. It goes like Thursday to Thursday or something like that. They have an odd schedule, and the specifics really don't matter until you actually subscribe to it. But I think that's a pretty damn good deal.
Yeah, and I think it's a really smart program to roll out during the summer, because you're going to be getting a lot of blockbusters, and you're also going to be getting sort of like the more like family oriented movies. You know, the summer movie season is usually for blockbusters and like slower movies that aren't expected to do super well. And at least personally, every summer I find myself looking at the movie times or like the available show times, and there's just one movie that I'm really interested in seeing, and it doesn't really change that much from month to month. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like so, Jurassic Park will play for probably, especially at a theater like AMC. You know, we're over here at Wacker. Our closest AMC is going to be River East, which is a huge theater, and there's even a dine-in AMC less than like, I don't know, 4 blocks away.
Yeah.
So, AMC River East is like a 25 screen theater. It's huge. So it's going to be carrying a lot of these movies for a long period of time. So you can really do some damage, like in terms of seeing a lot of movies. And it gets you, from a business perspective, it's the same thing as MoviePass. It gets you in there. It gets you spending money. They've got a guaranteed $20 a month now from you, guaranteed. And you're still going to get your drink upgrades. It's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. If I full disclosure, as many of you know, I work in a movie theater. If I went to other movie theaters more or had time to go see movies more,
you'd be all over this one, you think?
I think so.
Over
MoviePass. MoviePass does obviously have the flexibility of not having to go to an AMC.
Right.
There's a movie theater up in Evanston I like to go to, but like, you know, I could go to the River East 3 times a week if I were really super interested in it, you know, if it really tickled my fancy.
Mm.
And if I were getting these kind of premium features. But on the side, support small theaters. You know, that's where the MoviePass is really nice, because at the theater I work at, it helps us out so much because it gets more butts in seats. You know, we still get our ticket price. It's not like we're losing a ticket. We get our ticket price. And then everything on top of that, we get the concessions off of that as well. So MoviePass has always been kind of a boon for us. And it would be a shame to see a drop in numbers because all of a sudden I have to run that MoviePass card and be like, okay, yeah, you need to pay an extra $2 for surge pricing. And I guarantee you there's going to be someone that's just like, what the fuck do you mean $2? Like, there are people now, MoviePass is already kind of volatile in terms of some people really don't know how to use it. Like, they don't know. They come in, they're like, I have a reservation. And because that's what they call it on the app. And, or it's like, I have the MoviePass. And I go to run the card and declines. And I'm just like, well, did you sign in on the app? They're like, what app?
Dude.
Did you read how to do this?
Yeah.
Or did you just sign up? I don't know. It's odd, but it'll be interesting to see. I guarantee you large chains like Cinemark as well are probably going to roll out stuff like this. Regal will roll out something like, if they haven't already. It's hard to keep up, but it seems that this is the result of the last 10 years almost of media thinking of this switch to a subscription model for literally anything.
Right.
Anything could be subscribed to, whatever it is, to get those guaranteed dollars.
Right.
Because once people subscribe to something, it's very easy to just keep them going. It's very easy. Newspapers did it. I used to be subscribed to the Wall Street Journal. And when I was like, oh, I can't really afford to do this anymore. It's getting a little pricey for me. They will literally just be like, they'll come back at you and be like, we'll cut $25 off the subscription.
Yeah.
Like, and then you're just like, damn, wow, that is a pretty good, you know, like.
And I do like reading the Wall Street Journal.
I do. But, you know, whatever they can do to keep you paying that $20 rate will probably be good for them.
And it's kind of interesting. If you've been following this at all, there's a little bit of a soap opera between MoviePass and AMC, because AMC was one of the first, was the first, like, big chain to come out and say, we are not okay with MoviePass.
Yeah.
And so this is sort of like a retaliation for that. But the way my perception,
hypocritical it on is. Some level,
yeah. But my perception of MoviePass has always been one of sort of like consumer protection, because they recognize that the industry is shrinking. People are paying less to go see movies because of like streaming services and all of that.
Yeah.
But they're trying to protect the trying to protect that method of exhibition, and also trying to incentivize consumers to get out of their house and actually go to these theaters.
Yeah.
So, and the way that it seems like with AMC is it's almost like when, like, I don't know, Amazon came out and released their streaming services.
Yeah, Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, and then Hulu and everything, and not necessarily in that order, but you get what I'm saying, is it seems as though it's this retaliation to make it so that the subscription service can live on even in something as old and established as you know, a movie theater.
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on here, and I think people who are both movie fans and people who are interested in the business of exhibition would do well to watch where this goes, because this could be a total disaster. This could be total, like, just selling at a loss, or this could be the way that we go forward in terms of the theater-going experience. Obviously, we have streaming at home now. That just is.
Yeah.
That's just going to happen. That's just how life's going to be forever now, until they come up with, like, fucking streaming your eyeballs. Yeah.
Beaming it into your fucking brain.
Boo!
It'll just be called beaming it into your fucking skull. That's what the kids will call it.
Hey, what are you doing? Hey, you want to beam into my fucking skull and chill?
It sounds like a euphemism for drugs, but we are, of course, talking about watching Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, I just love that. What are you going to do now? Oh, I think I'm going to beam Seven Samurai right into my fucking head.
Like, oh, are you going to watch it in 7 seconds, or are you going to watch... Are you going to watch it in full time? Well, I don't know. I think I might speed it up here and there.
Get through a little bit of this. Yeah. You know, I get it. It's a classic, but it's also 3.5 hours long. Let's move on to another interesting news story, which is pretty interesting, especially in the world of post-Me Too. Kobe Bryant. He was part of an Oscar-winning short.
Documentary series, right?
It was a short.
Oh, it was just a short documentary.
Yeah, okay. Essentially, like, at the end of the day, Kobe Bryant won an Oscar,
right?
And according to the Academy rules, like, you can then join the Academy and become a voter. However, he was denied entry into the Academy by powers that be.
There are suspicions about why that is. Like, press release about the rationale behind it?
Yeah, so the hard line on it was the Academy says it's because he doesn't have, like, enough experience.
Right.
Like, he cannot really be considered, like, a big contributor to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, because he was just kind of involved with this
one
thing. Yeah. And it's a little bit like... To me, it comes off as a little bit snooty, but at the end of the day, I think it was a cover for Kobe Bryant's 2003 sexual assault. I apologize if the legal language isn't there. It might have been a rape case, might have been a sexual assault case, but because of his sexual assault case back in 2003, which was settled out of court, but he's always kind of had this odd reputation since, where, you know, we're talking about a guy that's considered a legend of basketball, but is also potentially a sexual criminal.
Right.
And so people don't want to shun him, but they also maybe should, and maybe the Academy has a point here, and it would definitely not be good, and I hate using this term, optics. It would not be good optics if the Academy were to allow him in after there's just been this whole rising tide of pushback against this sexual deviancy,
right,
for lack of a better word, in the filmmaking community and the television community all over the place.
And his denial kind of comes in the wake of another couple of moves that the Academy have made. They got rid of Harvey Weinstein and, right, Bill Cosby. They removed them from the Academy.
Yeah. So it would just be inconsistent if they'd,
right,
let Kobe in.
Right. And I think that, frankly, it reflects that at the very least, it is a promising step forward for the social politics of the Academy.
Right.
Which have always been there, but for them to progress in a way that we can actually track with these news stories is encouraging.
Yeah, it's nice to know that the Academy actually pays attention instead of doing what they did for like the last
100 years.
Oh yeah, almost 100 years of just like, you know, like, well, he's a man.
Yeah. And he is a man that we've put on many movies.
Yeah. And just letting that happen. Right. So I'm okay with that. I can live with Kobe Bryant not being part of the Academy. Although, you know, not to be too middle of the road here, because I don't want to far be it from me to want to come out on the side of someone who is accused of a sexual crime. But, you know, unlike Weinstein, or at least unlike Cosby, he was never convicted of anything.
Didn't Harvey Weinstein get arrested?
He did get arrested. Harvey Weinstein, he's going down.
Right.
It's
only a
matter of time. The evidence is all there. It just hasn't been solidified in a court of law. As far as I'm concerned, he is going to go to prison.
Yeah.
Like, he is going to go, he's going to be convicted of a crime. Bill Cosby, convicted of a crime. Kobe Bryant, not actually convicted of a crime, as far as I know. That was settled out of court. And I'm no lawyer.
Right.
I don't know what kind of details were brought up during that case. All I know is that the Academy really, at this point, cannot afford to be associated with someone that has had those charges brought up against them. And I think they're going to continue with that policy. I think that's definitely just the way it's going to have to be for the time, for the, you know, time immemorial now.
And anyone that's been following the news with the Me Too movement and everything, I don't think that any rational person would necessarily think that that's a bad thing.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Star Wars.
Speaking of Hollywood bullshit.
Yeah.
So a little bit of some more inside baseball, as it were. It's been reported that Lucasfilm is now suspending production or any sort of plans for an Obi-Wan standalone movie. As many people know, the Star Wars franchise has been chugging along with at least one movie per year.
Yep.
And it'll alternate between a main entry into the saga and one of their anthology entries, usually
taking place prior to the original trilogy.
Yeah. And those are all labeled a Star Wars story. We've had Rogue One, a Star Wars story, a movie that I am extremely lukewarm on, but I thought was okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, okay, I can at least see what they're trying to do with this. This could be potentially interesting. And then Solo.
Have not seen it yet.
You have not seen Solo?
No, I have not. I feel the Star Wars fatigue, man. I gotta be honest.
Oh, yeah. I even really thought Solo was, I think its biggest crime was that it was just kind of like obvious. You know what I mean? Like,
sure,
everything you saw in it, you're just like, yeah, yeah. Like, it hits all the notes. There were parts of it that I thought were actually pretty endearing. A lot of people really hate this movie on a philosophical level. On like I think that's a good reason to hate this movie, is that like, really, this is what we're going to accept as like entertainment? And I think
holy shit, that's,
yeah,
that's scorched earth.
Well, I mean, there's some critics that I really, really enjoy throwing some serious vitriol at Solo because of what it represents, is that like, we're just going to shit out a middle of the road, basic
origin story
that really doesn't do anything super interesting and bows to corporate interests as opposed to being artistically relevant or fascinating.
And what better way to describe that news story that you introduced this bit about? They're suspending these Star Wars anthology pieces because Solo didn't perform well at the box office relative to its predecessors.
Right. Even
it's just bowing to corporate interest.
Yeah. Rogue One did pretty damn well despite being like excruciatingly average at times.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I you know, unlike a lot of people, I've really quite enjoyed the main entries into the saga, specifically The Last Jedi. A lot of people really hate that movie. A lot of people really fucking hate that movie. But I thought it was fantastic in a lot of ways. It's not perfect. Far be it from me to say it's perfect. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, if you really wanted to be that person, you could be like, well, I would have done blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, the movie in your head is never going to be as good as the movie that, you know, you actually see. And I think a lot of people, Star Wars fans, could stand to realize that. I don't think it's bad that they're going to take, hopefully, I would like to see an Obi-Wan movie. I think it'd be interesting as a core Star Wars fan, someone that I really enjoy watching those movies. I have a lot of nostalgia for them, which is maybe a cardinal sin of film criticism, but hey, what can I do? I'm only human.
And let's not kid ourselves. Ewan McGregor's role in there were a lot of problems with the prequel trilogy, but Ewan McGregor was not one of them, I didn't think.
I thought he was
the strongest aspect.
Probably, yeah. He was a great choice.
So and I hope that happens.
Yeah, I really do. And I find it interesting that there's a lot of fanboy backlash against the sequels and then like this kind of softening on the prequels. I was like, what? Did you watch those? And even I have a bit of a soft spot for them because those were the Star Wars movies that came out when I was a child.
Yeah.
As far as I knew, that was all Star Wars. That was not like, I didn't get the whole like, this isn't my Star Wars. George Lucas, you know, raped my childhood, which is the most heinous thing that you could say. Fuck you if you honestly feel that way. But like, there's this softening. Well, at least the prequels were original. I'm like, yeah, but they were also shit.
Yeah, like the midichlorian aspect of it was bullshit.
Yeah. Side note, did you see what George Lucas said?
He's going to take it into the micro world of midichlorians. Could you imagine?
And
like,
there were friends of mine who are total Star Wars, like huge Star Wars fans, are just like, oh, I wish I could have seen that. You wish you could have seen that? Why would you want to see that?
I know.
That sounds like kind of dumb.
Yeah. Like, what is it going to be? It's going to go into the bloodstream, and you're going to see little Jedi blood cells fighting particles of shit. I mean, Sith.
Shit.
And that's what I think of your idea, George Lucas. Stay in the producer booth.
Yeah. It's
you absolute. Windshield to borrow one of your
cabbage. And to close the Star Wars bag, there has been a campaign on Twitter to remake The Last Jedi.
Oh yeah, it's hilarious.
It's so you can see I tweeted about this at Mount Hushmore if you want to follow.
Gross.
But plug bag. But fanboy, this is like fanboy entitlement at its absolute worst. Is like, we didn't like this movie, so this is not the movie that we thought it was going to be, or we didn't like it, so therefore it has to be remade to save, quote from them, save Star Wars. What do you think this is?
Yeah.
It's a film franchise. Get the net.
They
it's
don't give so a ridiculous. Shit about your fans. You are a bottom line. You are a number to them.
Yeah.
And you saw the movie.
Except for, I would say, Rian Johnson. I think Rian Johnson legitimately loves this franchise.
Oh, right.
And now he's getting beaten down by these fanboys. And to be fair, he tweeted... he like retweeted that remake The Last Jedi, and he said, please, yeah, do this.
Yeah.
Remake The Last Jedi. And I don't know if it's out of irony or if it's out of a genuine, like, I want the fans to make movies. Like, that's cool. I think that's super cool. Or if he's getting beaten down to thinking that he made a bad movie. And I don't think he did. And at the end of the day, you some people really liked The Last Jedi. Some people really didn't. It still holds a really high rating on Rotten Tomatoes in terms of critic scores, but audience scores super low. And that's fine. If you did not like The Last Jedi, that's fine. They didn't remake Attack of the Clones, did they?
No.
That wasn't like, I mean, to be fair, there were fans that recut a lot of the, they recut the prequels into like one really long movie. People have, the remix culture around it is interesting, but what do you think? You're going to get the rights from Disney to remake it? This group legitimately thinks they're going to get the rights from Disney to remake The Last Jedi, and they're saying, oh, it's going to be by committee of people that both loved and hated The Last Jedi. And I was like, oh, really? People who hated The Last Jedi? I guarantee you that includes the group of people that bullied the actress that played Rose in the movie. I think Kelly Marie Tran.
Yep.
They bullied her off of Instagram. They gave her such shit. They would not leave her alone to the point where she's like, I can't even be on a public social media platform anymore.
Daisy Ridley had to leave as well.
Yeah.
Prior to that.
Good Lord. Is that really what you think these movies are about? If that's your reaction to that, then you have seriously lost the plot. That is so pathetic.
And like, let's just be real. Obviously, Star Wars is a huge part of people's childhoods,
sure,
but it's a fucking sci-fi space opera. Like,
it's a movie.
Grow up.
It's a movie, man.
It's like, not,
you can have opinions on it. You can go write a fucking think piece.
Yeah,
everybody else has. Whether you loved it or hated it, everybody's written a think piece about it. Join the chorus.
Right.
But this is not a substantial thing to me. I don't care.
No.
I do not care.
And they're going to just keep churning them out whether you like it or not, because it's very clear that the majority of people will go watch these movies.
Yeah, except for Solo, which I think came too soon.
Yeah.
6 months after The Last Jedi.
And just also there were so many news articles about it prior to its release.
Yeah, the press around it was
fraught production.
Yeah. All right. Real quick before we close things up, let's talk about a couple movies that we've watched recently.
Okay.
Connor, you want to start me off?
Sure. This is on Netflix, and we're going to probably talk about this with our friend Michael Smith.
Yeah, we're hoping to talk about this later with Mike.
It's a movie. It's a South Korean horror film called The Wailing. It's very long. I'm just going to get that out there right now. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes about.
I mean, that's to be fair, that is Last Jedi length.
It is, but
I'll give it that. But
it's formidable.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
That's a lot. You got to set aside 3 hours of your life to watch this movie.
But I will say this. If you are interested in horror movies at all, you can go into this expecting a horror movie, but what you're going to get out of it is a touching family drama, a frankly absurd and extremely effective comedy in certain areas, I think. And also just some of the score in that movie is some of the best freakout music I've listened to since I listened to The Bedlam and Goliath by the Mars Volta.
Oh my God.
Like, it's
just bonkers.
It's just insane. And it's funny, it's tongue in cheek, but it's at its core horrifying. And I think that is the most important thing. Like, it reminded me of the feeling that I had after I walked out of the theater for Killing of a Sacred Deer, where I felt frankly disturbed, but I didn't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I realized after thinking about it has everything to do with just the title of the movie, The Wailing. There is so much screaming in this movie and so much, it's just so blood-curdling that once you finish watching it, you can't really get those screams out of your head.
So it really delivers on its premise.
It does. All absolutely.
Right. Any other big ones?
Well, I watched The Boy on Netflix, which is a nice little haunted house thriller. I don't mean to be an ass. I don't mean to be condescending, but in relation to The Wailing, it's nothing to really sneeze at. But I'll say this about The Boy. It's scary at times. It's fun to watch with people. Fun, ultimately a little dumb.
Okay.
What have you been watching, Tom?
So to counter The Wailing, I went and saw a movie that a lot of people have been talking about, Hereditary.
Mm.
And I really, really loved it. I think it might have to do with the conditions under which I saw it, which obviously we'll talk about with Michael Smith. I watched it at like 1 o'clock in the morning in an empty theater with just me and my friend, me and my coworker. 7-Eleven pepperoni pizza between us.
In hand. Wonderful.
And like there was, the theater was closed. You know, we were watching it after hours. And there were images in that movie that I wish I could burn out of my eyeballs. Like there were things that I saw and things I felt that I hadn't been that legitimately like terrified by anything in a very long time. So, you know, I really loved it. Although the reaction from audiences has been like really poor overall. Like
really?
Yeah. It has a cinema score of D+. That's like getting down into Mother territory, which ironically another movie I really quite liked.
did you know?
And watching people walk out of that theater, they were either legitimately terrified, like nerves rubbed raw, or they thought it was the dumbest thing they've ever seen.
Wow.
And really didn't like it. So I think it's going to be an interesting study in like horror, especially because it's been getting such intense praise. So I recommend Hereditary, but I'm very excited to hear people's opinions on it. I'm very excited to talk to Mike about it. And then I finally watched a sequel to a movie that I really enjoyed when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of delivering on its premise, yeah. I thought was okay. Pacific Rim Uprising. it's like intensely predictable.
Right.
It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense at times. Scott Eastwood is like so untalented in this movie. It's not even funny. Like anytime he's on the screen, I almost shouted. Like I was watching it alone and I almost booed him off the screen because I was just like, he has zero of his father's charisma. Like he seems like the kind of guy, it looks like he watched his dad be in like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and thought that acting was just looking stoic.
Yeah.
Or just being gruff.
Yeah.
And he's just like, compared to John Boyega, who plays the protagonist, who really does a fun job here. He plays kind of this roguish dude, little bit of that Han Solo vibe, kind of doesn't give a shit about anything, and then he learns to care, blah, 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 blah. But
through the battling of giant fucking robots, right?
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, I signed up for robots fighting monsters and other robots, and that's what I got, and some plot in between, and like very thin character development, but enough for me to like, you know, John Boyega was charismatic enough to carry me through it. Really, I think not too bad. Sets it up for a third one too, so I don't know if Universal's really gonna go for it, but I'd watch it.
I would watch it if I heard that in the title credit where it shows the, you know, the world in the Universal logo, if a giant robot like destroyed, you could see like destroying the earth or something.
So we'll see where that goes. The Pacific Rim franchise, like, who really would have thought that this kind of like odd Guillermo del Toro like popcorn movie would even get a sequel? I didn't think it would get a sequel because I kind of wrapped it up in the first one. I didn't really expect anything more.
Monster movies.
Yeah.
They're coming. For you.
They're coming. All right. That's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for your patience as we moved over to our new studios. We've got so many great conversations going to be coming up in the next few weeks. Very excited. So glad to be back in the studio with you, Connor.
Yeah. I've missed you, Tom. And I know that I can tell that it's uncomfortable that I keep docking my knee with yours, but it feels like
it's
home.
It's so sweaty.
It feels like home. All right.
Okay. This is No Coast Cinema. No Coast Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you all next week.